This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Concerns about the presence of mercury in fish keep a lot of people from consuming what comes off the line. And that's a concern anywhere there is a large body of fresh water, like, say, Lake Michigan. Over the last decade, a group of scientists set out to discover if new mercury added to a lake would make its way more quickly into the aquatic food chain faster than old mercury. The answer was a resounding yes. And so the next question might be, how long does it take to get mercury out of the food chain? Early results of the long-range study were published in a recent online issue of Science of the Total Environment. WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bent spoke with one of the researchers, UW-Madison scientist Jim Hurley. He fills us in on the study, which was staged in a unique environment 250 kilometers east of Winnipeg.
My work on this particular project was on the water chemistry side, and what we were looking at is how quickly mercury that's added to a lake actually gets incorporated into fish.
So it works its way through the food web.
That's right.
Other scientists or technicians were releasing the mercury at different spots in different forms. They wanted to find out where it was moving the fastest, whether it was,
right. You
know, is that right?
Right. What we really want to find out is critical in mercury in understanding how mercury accumulates in fish or bioaccumulates in fish is that it has to be transformed from inorganic mercury to methyl mercury. And you have to have microbes that actually make that conversion. So the question is, where is that happening? Where is the conversion of inorganic mercury, which is the main form of mercury that comes in from rain or from dry fall deposition from the atmosphere? Most of that is inorganic mercury, but almost 100% of the mercury that accumulates in fish is methyl mercury. So understanding the timing and the response to added inputs as to how that leads to bioaccumulation is really important, and understanding where that conversion from inorganic mercury to methyl mercury occurs is critical to learn. The difficult part of understanding how mercury works in a lake is that you have this pool of mercury that's been around for a long time. If you consider the fact that mercury has been entering through the atmosphere for ages, but since industrialization, it's really been enhanced about 3 to 5 times its natural background levels.
And what does that mean, the natural background levels?
So since mercury is a crustal element, there are certain pathways of it to enter the atmosphere and to be transported globally. So things like volcanoes or venting from the deep oceans, there was always a little bit of mercury in the atmosphere because of those types of natural processes. What happens since industrialization is when you're burning coal and when you're doing other types of industrial processes, you're increasing that background by about a factor of 4. By increasing it, that's what we tend to see as mercury that is accumulated in fish and puts the advisory levels to levels that they are at because of that added mercury. So the question is, since we've been putting all of this mercury into the atmosphere, if we were to decrease mercury inputs to the atmosphere, and because of that we would decrease the mercury in atmospheric deposition, will we be able to see a change in the amount of mercury that bioaccumulates in fish? And that's a real difficult question to answer unless you use some different types of techniques. And this was where the work with stable isotopes and the advance in chemical analytical instrumentation allowed us to ask these questions on a whole watershed experiment. What's interesting about it is in the first year is the only year that you can see that initial spike. I mean, we added that same isotope the following year, and there was carryover from the previous year. So when we did the study during the first, especially in the first year, you could see how quickly the initial isotope got into different parts of the lake. And we actually saw methyl mercury being produced in the lake within about 2 to 3 weeks after we added the first small dose.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Your work is part of a broader project called Metallicus, and that has an international scope, doesn't it?
It does. it's the metallic cusp, the C-U-S is Canada and the U.S. So we brought together scientists from all over Canada and a number of scientists from the United States to address the questions about atmospheric deposition. If we change atmospheric deposition and the amount of mercury that comes into a lake, will we be able to see changes in what bioaccumulates in fish? The part that we've reported on in recent publication is on the early stages of the study.
Okay, and so the heart of your results are what?
The heart of our results show that the new mercury that we added appears to be more bioactive than that mercury that's been sitting in the lake for years and years, or sitting in the soils and being transported through streams in the watershed. We found that when we added it directly to the lake, we could see that mercury get incorporated into phytoplankton to a much greater extent than the background pool. And then that mercury also was delivered to the parts of the lake where microbes are present that convert inorganic mercury to methyl mercury. What we want to see is if you add mercury and you can follow that added mercury, can you get a proportional increase in the amount of mercury that accumulates in the top predator fish?
And you're finding that's true.
We're finding it's true.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding that it happens fairly quickly, too.
That was surprising, correct?
That was really surprising. We saw that methylmercury was starting to accumulate in small yellow perch by the fall of the first year that we added it. So we added mercury in 10 different doses over the course of the open water period on a lake. So it was from late May until sometime in early October. And we could clearly see that by September, we were starting to see the signal of that added mercury in the fish in detectable amounts.
So I read that before your study and other Metallicus work, that scientists didn't know how long it took mercury to move through the environment. How much was known before you all got started on this?
Well, there were studies that could show that in places where you saw higher rates of deposition of mercury, that there were higher levels of mercury in fish. But you didn't.
Meaning higher volume of mercury?
Yeah, higher volume of mercury through rainfall or because they were near local point sources. And you could see elevated concentrations in fish, but you didn't know whether that was due to a long historical accumulation of that mercury or whether it was due to the more recent mercury that had been put into the lakes.
What's the heart? What's the significance of your results, and what should the average person's take be on this work?
The significance of the results is that we were able to trace mercury. We really needed to trace that new mercury that was added to the lake and to the watershed and to the wetland. We could show that by adding mercury and by following that trace that it would increase the bioaccumulation in the top predatory fish. But what was equally important is the work that's been done over the past 5 years or so that said once we stopped adding isotopes, we got a fairly immediate response in most of the food web in the lake, and that it began to drop. So if you mimic our study with saying, okay, we want to decrease the amount of mercury that comes in, say, from coal-fired power plants, we were seeing a response really quickly in this lake to lowering the amount of inputs. And if you extrapolate back on where the original mercury came from, if most of the mercury that's entered into the atmosphere comes from coal-fired plants and then that gets transported to a lake, if you can decrease the sources, you should see a fairly rapid response in lakes like the one that we study.
The EPA has used your findings to justify rules that are designed to decrease mercury emissions from power plants, and that resulted in a mercury and air toxic standards, right, that was passed
That's
in
right.
2011. So is one point that there's still room for tightening those standards?
Well, I mean, in order to enact that rule, they had to have some sort of evidence that by decreasing the emissions from coal-fired plants or from electric-generating boilers and such, that you would see an effect in the environment. And this was one of the first studies to show that you could actually see that type of response if you followed through our study design. Yeah, it does say that perhaps the more we find out, the more we might want to consider the magnitude of those restrictions or responses.
So you mentioned earlier that it's tough to find out where the conversion is happening. Are you figuring that out now as well, or are you far away from that point?
No, we tend to think that we're getting a handle on that, that it looks like there are microbes that are present just on the surface of the sediment. So sitting atop of the muck that's on the bottom of the lake, that's where most of that conversion to methylmercury is taking place. See, we had also thought that perhaps we were getting most of our methylmercury coming into the lake from a wetland, because typically in wetlands you have a lot of microbes that reduce sulfur. So when you're in a wetland or a swamp and you smell that sulfide type of gas, that's an indication that sulfate-reducing bacteria are present in that wetland. So we didn't know if we were going to get conversion of methylmercury in the wetland, and then that methylmercury would be leached into the lake, or if we were getting processes occurring within the lake itself. And what this research is tending to show is that the in-lake methylation is pretty important, is the most important for bioaccumulation up into higher predatory fish.
The future of this experimental lakes area is at risk, is it not?
That's true. Yeah, the Canadian government has decided that they would not like to continue to fund the experimental lakes area, and that as of the end of March, that all research would basically shut down, which is really short-sighted. This is a very interesting project, but there have been so many projects done in the experimental lakes area over the past 30 to 40 years. One of the original studies was done looking at phosphorus in detergents, and was basically by adding different types of detergent or phosphates to lakes, they could see that there was a direct response from detergents to algal growth. So the work at the experimental lakes area, for one, helped us regulate phosphorus in laundry detergents in the U.S. There was a study. A whole lake was acidified, so we could look at what are the long-term effects of acid rain. There was another study that was going on while we were starting the Metallicus project. They added low-level pharmaceuticals to a lake to show that even small additions of ethinyl estradiol, which is basically from the birth control pill, which tends to sort of go right through our wastewater treatment plants, they were showing in the experimental lakes area that you can have feminization of fish because of that if you were to discharge at levels typically what we see in wastewater. So there's a study going on right now on nanoparticles, and what's the fate of nanoparticles as we move towards nanotechnology? Are we going a little too fast without checking at some of the ecological responses of adding nanoparticles to the environment? So it's you don't have the opportunity to do this type of research in many places, and that's why the experimental lakes area is so important.
What's next on your research agenda?
I'm going back to the Great Lakes. I had done work in the Great Lakes prior to working up at the experimental lakes area, and I'm really interested on, especially in Lake Michigan, on what the effects of quagga mussels and Cladophora and those issues that are affecting the nearshore zone, how that affects mercury cycling in the lake. The fact that we've been seeing offshore chlorophyll or offshore phytoplankton counts drop significantly in the open waters of Lake Michigan, we're also seeing a similar decline in the amount of mercury in the offshore zones. And we're wondering if that's all being shifted to the nearshore zones now because of the way that quagga mussels have filtered so much water and so much algae out of the lake.
So there's no lack of material.
No. No, I mean, people have been studying. I started doing mercury work about 25 years ago, and there are just so many different angles, and there are so many different questions that need to be answered.
Will you be presenting at the 11th International Conference on Mercury as a Global Pollutant?
I will. And in fact, I'm working on an abstract right now.
So is that a gathering that occurs, every couple of years?
Yeah, it occurs just about every 2 years, every 2 to 3 years, I guess. We hosted the meeting here in Madison in 2006.
So how many scientists, I suppose it's scientists and students and
yeah,
who come?
In Madison, I think our total numbers were about 1,100.
Good grief.
And I think the first conference had about 75 to 100 people.
So it underscores the importance of the research and the issue. I mean, when you say mercury as a global pollutant, it gives one pause.
It certainly does.
Jim Hurley directs the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Program. He's one of the scientists collaborating on a large-scale study called Metallicus that pools the expertise of U.S. and Canadian researchers. Their mission is to discover how a watershed responds to changes in mercury loading. There's a link to the group's initial findings and to more information about the Experimental Lakes area from wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take a break now and then meet Melanie Hofford, author of a moving new memoir about growing up in the upper Midwest and her challenges in returning home. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.